Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonya Rackley.
Sonya, today we enter Season 3 of X-Men Evolution, an episode called Day of Recovery. It's actually quite an awesome episode, mm-hmm. and I'd say even better than the conclusion of Season 2, which we like quite a bit as well.
I agree.
So that'll be exciting to talk about. Before we do, let's get the plugs out of the way. First, you can follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group, where you can interact with us and all the other like-minded fans in that community. Always fun to have people in there. Rate and review the show 5 stars on iTunes, whatever podcast service you use. We always appreciate that support as well. Give us a follow on Twitch, twitch.tv/willie8911 to potentially catch future broadcasts and other sort of live video presentations we might do at a future date. And that's it for the plugs. Before we start talking about Evolution Season 3, or the beginning of it anyway, there are two very cool things we need to discuss. We will be discussing WandaVision Episode 8, but before we do, we saw the new TV show Superman and Lois, which kind of blew my hair back a little bit. I'm personally a big Superman fan. I've always been annoyed at people saying Superman's a boring character, that he, you know, it's pointless to have him in general. I always thought that was stupid. There's a million great Superman comics. There's a million great Superman stories. There are actually several great Superman movies. So just to dismiss Superman as being a pointless, overpowered, boring character is you're really like missing out and self-limiting yourself. And I think this show is proof of it, and it's proof of how many interesting and weird directions you could take the character, and how, you know, like, and before we start talking about the details, I just want to say, to hammer home this point, that when a character's existed for 75 years plus, it kind of doesn't matter what entry point you begin the Superman story, and I think the show is emblematic of that. So you watched it too, Sonya. Mm-hmm. So before we dive into a little bit more detail on it, what were your initial impressions of it?
I don't have the history with Superman that you do. I just didn't grow up with Superman as like a character in my life, so I don't have a strong connection as you do. But I have seen various Superman media over the years. I was a big fan of Lois and Clark when
really?
I was a kid.
You know, I was a big fan of that too. We were young when that came out.
I mean, I don't even remember it really that well. It was a cool show.
Right. I mean, it might have even been a little bit before X-Men Animated Series or around the same time. And it was an adult show, more or less.
Yeah.
It was goofy. But, like, my memories of it are fazy. I was just happy to see Superman.
Right.
I probably didn't get the rest of it.
I don't think I really understood what was going on.
Yeah.
But I knew that it was a superhero live-action show. And that wasn't that common.
It was on those
years for me to see, so
yeah.
I just thought that was cool about it. I think because I, you know,
yeah, whatever. Of course, yeah. I mean, it was on Netflix or something similar a few years ago. It still might be.
Mm-hmm.
I tried rewatching it.
Not good.
It didn't hold up at all to me. It wasn't. It didn't give me the. It didn't have that fun nostalgia vibe that I'm looking for in vintage TV.
Mm.
I just felt it was a bit too. It was like too weird and boring. It just didn't hit the sweet spot.
Right.
It's not to say it's bad or anything. I don't know. It didn't grab me in my later adult years.
Okay.
But as a, like, memory, it was a great memory.
Right, yeah. And then also, I tried giving Smallville a chance when that was on TV.
I hung tight with, I think Smallville came out when I was a junior or senior in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I hung tight with it the first couple of seasons. I watched every episode. I thought it was really great. It's a show built on a tease where you're just like, oh, maybe he's finally going to get the Superman costume.
Right.
But then you realize after a while, like, no, it's just he's in Smallville.
It's just a teen drama, kind of.
Yeah.
It's like the epitome of the CW thing.
I remember enjoying it at the time.
Uh-huh.
I have no real desire to revisit it.
No, me neither.
But
anyway,
yeah.
Like those were my two reference points, basically, for like a Superman TV show.
Right.
And
never really saw the Superman animated series that like came after Batman.
No, not... Yeah.
I was very excited for it, obviously. It didn't grab me as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a few episodes here and there. I did end up watching more of it later in life when it started appearing on streaming services.
Hmm.
And I tried to watch the entire series. I got through a lot of it, and I liked it. It was good, but it's still... there's two things that bothered me about it. He's more of an underpowered Superman, which, you know, they often do in these media to make it, like,
have more high stakes or something.
Yeah, more believable threats to him.
Yeah.
But, again, not my favorite. I know it's coming to HBO Max, and, like, they've I don't know if they've remastered it, but they've formatted it for high-definition television. Mm-hmm. So I might check it out again, because there are definitely good episodes, and it crosses over with the Batman universe. Mm.
Oh, that's cool.
And I definitely saw, you know, they carried that character over into the Justice League spinoff shows, too, with the Kevin Conroy Batman as well. Mm. I mean, to me, it's like, it's the Batman animated series style, but in the daylight, mainly.
Mm. Gotcha, yeah.
It didn't, like, there's a blockiness to it that the animation didn't grab me like the Batman show. Mm-hmm. Again, a good show.
Right. So anyways, you know, those are the reference points before mm-hmm. going into this show.
Yes.
And from the commercials, I thought it was going to be sort of like a Smallville type show, because it's a lot of it. Oh, the first episode is set like...
The biggest reference point for the show is Supergirl.
Ah, yes, that's
with
you.
Melissa Benoit, right?
Right, yeah.
Who I think is an adorable human being.
Uh-huh.
But, and she's really cool. But Supergirl, again, like, I tried watching it and it just didn't grab me, which is, I was a little bummed about, because we watched like the first 4 or 5 seasons of Arrow. We were really into that.
Mm-hmm.
We got into the first 2 seasons of Flash, but then it petered out. We tried with like the other spinoff shows. It just got too, I think, like the CW verse, at least for me anyway, it got like too much.
Yeah.
And there was too much other good TV probably at a certain point where the CW show just felt like, why am I bothering with this anymore?
Right.
And Supergirl came sort of at the end of that whole experience. And I don't know. Again, I like Melissa Benoit. I like Supergirl, the character. This version of Superman was introduced on Supergirl.
I know. I was going to say, do you think there's going to be crossover at some point?
Difficult to say, because the impression I've gotten reading a little bit about the show is that it's like a soft reboot from his appearance in Supergirl. It's not quite the same thing. It might be, it might not be, because, for instance, there's a version of Lex Luthor in the Supergirl universe,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the Lex Luthor in this show.
Right.
Which, if you haven't seen the show, we're going to spoil it, so mm-hmm. I'd recommend watching it if you're curious before listening to us blather on about it. But we do thoroughly recommend it. We'll cut to that point if you want to stop and watch the show. I do recommend that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I'm not quite sure how it connects to the CW universe. I know that it gets... apparently, I read its production budget is funded by HBO Max money, which means that the special effects are a little more impressive than you get in your standard CW show, which I thought came off watching it.
Yeah, I agree.
But it is the same actor. The guy, I think his name is Tyler Hoechlin. Difficult name to pronounce. I think he's a great actor. I particularly loved him in the Richard Linklater movie, Everybody Wants Some.
Mm-hmm.
I always get the title confused. Is it Everybody Gets Some or Everybody Wants? Anyway, it's like it's a semi-sequel to Dazed and Confused, where it's about baseball players in college in the early 1980s. Even if you don't like baseball, it's a great, great movie.
Yeah.
Like, really has a lot of heart, is really surprisingly good and funny. And Tyler Hoechlin is like the main baseball jock in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting, I read about him in real life that he was a serious college baseball player too, but he got injured and so he pursued acting instead.
Huh. Interesting.
But yeah, he's a good actor. He's Superman.
He's not like what I would think of as a Superman necessarily, but
yeah, a bit of a different look. He's not
exactly.
Right. He's not as pale. But he's got the black hair and the square jaw.
Yeah. No, he pulls it off.
Yeah. He's got a little bit of a 5 o'clock shadow, it seems. Does he? Or am I just imagining that?
I don't know.
Yeah, I might just be remembering his Wikipedia page photo or something.
Anyway, I think he does a good job in the show so far. And I like the entry point that they take where, like, he's an adult and he's been absent for a lot of his kids', like, great moments
right.
in life.
Wait. So the first 3 minutes of the show... This is what I love most about the show.
Uh-huh.
And when I was talking about entry points to the Superman story,
uh-huh.
they just montage the hell out of a huge chunk of Superman's life.
Yes, right.
You see...
I mean, right. That's what's interesting, though, because right. you're like, at what point are they going to stop the montage and we're going to get to see some things
yeah.
happen?
Yeah.
You don't know how far they're going to take it.
I mean, the montage was interesting. You see the death of his father.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like Man of Steel where he lets his father die. His father just has a heart attack, more like the original Christopher Reeves movie.
Right.
He's sad about that. He moves to Metropolis, meets Lois Lane, falls in love, reveals to Lois Lane that he's Superman. They get married, have kids. And then, like, you see him do some Superman action in Metropolis, and he's got a nice fanboy touch or fan service touch was they give him the original 1938 Superman outfit with the red trunks and everything and sort of the black Superman S on his chest. And it looks awesome. It's so great. I think...
Is that the one he gets complimented on? He's like, yeah. My mom made it.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a, you know, it's hard for me to specifically remember, like, which part of Superman's story is canon with how he gets the costume. Sometimes he gets it from his family in Krypton. Sometimes, like you said, like Martha Kent knits it for him. I remember in Lois and Clark, there was a big scene where his mom makes him the costume. Like, they try several different outfits. Like, some are like purple and yellow and like crazy. Like, he's got a mask. But then they finally hit on the Superman one. So I think it just depends on the... There's so many different Superman origin stories that... Whatever, it's fine. Anyway, that first costume looked cool, but then he gets like a more modern costume later,
yeah,
when the montage concludes, and he doesn't have the trunks, which bothers me, which we've talked about in this podcast before, but let me just reiterate why I think the trunks are necessary. I just think color palette
pulls the look together.
Yeah, pulls the look together. The blue, red, blue combo. You know, I've heard the explanations like, oh, the trunks, it's silly. It's like a wrestler. It's like an old-timey wrestler.
Yeah, but that's where it came from.
Yeah, that's where it came from. But also, it's like, who questions that to begin with? He's an alien. Anyway, this is the weird outfit he wears. So that's why he wears red underpants over his blue pants. I feel like you don't even need to explain it. So, but anyway, his final version does have the trunks, but the outfit does look really good.
Okay.
I thought so, anyway.
We're not going to go through, like, scene by scene.
No,
right?
Not at all.
I just want to say one of my favorite scenes was... when, like, he's finally confessing to his two kids that he's Superman.
Hey, he's got two teenage sons, like you said, which is a hilarious touch to me.
And they're twins, right?
Yeah, they're supposed to be, I guess.
And, you know, he's standing in front of them as Clark Kent, like, with his wife next to him. And, like, they're slowly putting it together, being like, you can't be Superman. We've met Superman. We've seen him.
No way, you're
and
Superman.
And he, like, takes off his glasses.
Yeah.
It's me.
I see. I would have loved a little moment where they're like, wait, how come we couldn't tell you were Superman with the glasses on? It's like, well, I've, like, there's a special... I can project
glasses shield my face.
Right, I've got, like, a mental projection, like, a superpower that maybe he'd say, but no, it's just...
Yeah.
Just suspend your disbelief. The glasses completely hide his identity, which is fine, but...
It's just funny because it's his own kids, you know?
Yeah.
I thought that was a hilarious moment.
What else did I want to say? Oh, I mean, the opening... He does this opening superhero act, too, where he saves a power plant from melting down. That was such a fucking awesome scene. It's like, to me, like a top five filmed Superman scene ever. He has to fly into the ocean and he uses his super breath to freeze a giant iceberg, which he lifts over his shoulders and drops it into the power plant. To me, that's the fantasy of Superman, you know? Like, that's what's great about him. That's why you want him around as a figure of imagination. You wish he was real because he could do amazing stuff like that. So that the show hooked me from there. I was a little worried. Like, I thought we were going into wacky territory when he's got two full-grown 14-year-old teenage sons. One's kind of a jock. One's an emo boy on antidepressants. But, I mean, I ended up liking that whole storytelling choice. I was, like, in love with it. I thought it was hilarious. It's, like, both funny and a really good idea for a Superman show. Like, here's Superman. He's still strong, handsome, young-looking. And he's got to deal with two sort of unruly 14-year-old boys that... don't really respect him.
Right.
It's just like, yeah, that's great. That's like, that's a beautiful new modern entry point for Superman. And he's worried about telling them a secret because he doesn't know if they have powers or not, and he doesn't want them to be burdened. He wants them to have a normal life. But Lois feels like you got to tell him, like, this is ridiculous.
I mean, that's stupid because it's always like that when there's secrets in TV shows, you know?
Right.
It's stupid because if one or both of them do have powers, they're going to find out, like, sometime soon, probably.
And then the drama about finding out the secret's so annoying as an audience member because oftentimes you're covering up a lot of plot holes. You're just yelling at the screen, like, how can you not figure this out yet?
Yeah.
The satisfying thing about episode one is that the kids figure it out pretty quickly, and at first they're kind of sad about it and angry and teen angsty, but they get over it by the end of the episode and everyone's a happy family.
And also they communicate well.
Yeah.
They don't, like, go off in secret and try to figure stuff out on their own. They go, like, straight to their parents being like, what is this?
Yeah,
like,
and it was I like the look on the one kid when he sees his dad lifting the truck and revealing himself as Superman. He's just got a stunned look on his face. The other kid is a lot more sad about it. But in the end, it all worked out in the end where, like everyone's accepting their new family. And I was like, yes, that's to me a more positive direction. Mm. I don't want like an annoying,
long, like drawn out,
right,
angst about it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like now, oh great, the super family. This is funny to me.
Yeah,
like let's see what happens. So we watched it on the CW app. It was free. I didn't even have to sign up or anything.
We had commercials, but
yeah, it was commercials.
It's just like watching TV,
right? Yeah,
I wish all the actual networks would do that.
Yeah,
NBC and ABC just
right. I mean, we don't have broadcast television.
Right,
we just have streaming networks in our house. Yeah, it's annoying that you can't just watch regular, just put it as a streaming app, and you know it's supposed to be free anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, it was on the CW app, easy to watch, looked beautiful, had great cinematography, special effects were good enough, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you see Superman flying around Metropolis, flying in space, just to me it looked like a lot of fun. I'm going to be watching every episode, and you know, hopefully it holds up. I mean, a lot of times, even shows with great pilots, they could fall off quickly. But I don't know. I'm hopeful for this one.
Yeah.
It's fun to have. It's sort of like we're in the 2020s now, trying to be more optimistic is hopefully thinking about one day soon when the pandemic's going to start to wind down. It's nice to have like a Superman show with a lot of optimism. Just feels like kind of needed, at least for me.
Hmm.
So happy about that. All right. WandaVision, episode 8.
All right.
It's my only criticism is that it's formulaic in the new way that serialized television is, where mystery, 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 second to last episode, explain,
reveal.
Right, it's like it's the backstory of the entire thing you've just seen, the previous 7 episodes, and then it's like, but it's still a stopgap between when you finally get the sort of satisfying conclusion you're looking for.
Yeah.
So that's not to say this episode was bad by any means. It was actually quite good, and there's many moments that were stirring and moving. Specifically when Vision is talking about grief. He says, as though it's just love persevering.
Mm.
That was a nice line. I really, really liked Elizabeth Olsen's acting in the entire episode. I thought she was convincing every time she let loose her enormous Scarlet Witch powers.
Uh-huh.
Just the looks of pained anguish on her face were quite satisfying.
Yeah.
What do you think of the Agatha Harkness backstory starting in Salem, Massachusetts?
I liked the idea. You know, we were talking about it when we were watching it. I liked the idea that not only were the Salem witch trials real, which they yeah. were, but the witches in the Salem right. witch trials were actually witches.
Yeah. It's just another thing
in this universe. I think that's really funny.
Vampires, Norse gods, Greek gods, witches, everything's real.
Right.
Ancient aliens.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's all happened. So, yeah, throw witches onto the pile. There was some great stuff. You got to see the Sokovia backstory.
Right.
Where the Stark bomb lands in her house, killing her parents. You know, they're watching the old TV shows. Her dad is a bootleg seller of classic American sitcoms.
Right. I mean, it's the explanation that you were talking about before we got the explanation of just, yeah. like, it was manufactured in that way of, like, a decade per episode because yeah. of Wanda's nostalgia.
Right,
from
yeah.
her childhood
yeah,
television. It doesn't explain
pretty obvious.
Family, but whatever.
Not quite. I mean, she watches shows later with Vision when she's an adult at the Avengers compound.
Yeah.
So maybe they're watching some newer stuff. But still, that was a great scene with those kid actors were really cute and adorable.
Yeah, they were.
And it was a really ultra sad scene just seeing the fighting on the streets and, you know, the Tony Stark bomb going off. And it was heavily implied that Wanda used her witch powers to stop the bomb as a little girl, which, of course, makes you think, oh, she's, like, she didn't get... It was heavily implied in Avengers 2 that she got her powers from the Mind Stone when they were experimenting on her with Baron Von Strucker.
Right.
But here it's like, no, like, maybe she had them before, so she's a mutant, mm-hmm. perhaps.
Yeah.
Although they kind of, like, also, they hedged it a bit, saying, like, she was a born witch. And they're establishing witches have existed for hundreds of years, so it's like a little...
And they're also establishing, like, there's witches that just have powers, but then there's witches that study formally and become even more powerful.
Right, and there's the whole Doctor Strange thing,
yeah.
too, of, like, his whole magic universe.
Right.
So, I mean, it's the... I guess they're probably saying, like, 80% she's born a witch, and she's just from the world of MCU magic.
Mm-hmm.
I still think they left open the door a little bit that she could be a mutant. And that,
maybe.
Yeah, it's, again, difficult to say, but they didn't outright make it clear, which is good, I think, that they're just going to figure it out later. So there are some great visual moments in this episode too, when she's looking into the Mind Stone and she sees a future vision of herself. You see her in a like a beautiful Scarlet Witch outfit, kind of silhouetted in a golden light.
Yeah.
That was cool. Again, the scenes where she recreates or she creates the hex in the first place, all that red magic flying around, building her house and turning the town black and white. That was an amazing visual thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, I mean, the big reveal by Agatha Harkness saying, oh, you're the Scarlet Witch, like as if it's some prophecy.
Right.
Which, I don't know. I was happy that they finally said the name Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
They're trying to give an origin. They're trying to give a plausible origin for the name as opposed to it just being a goofy superhero title, I guess.
Right.
I which, thought the concept that works for me.
Of the episode was like a little contrived, where we get to see all these flashbacks in like sequential order.
Yeah.
Because Agatha is trying to figure out how Wanda did this.
Right.
Like, what's the spell you used, or what's the type of magic that you used?
This magic is so intense.
So I have to delve into your psyche and see all of your traumatic moments from your past in order to figure it out. Like, that seemed kind of weak to me, honestly.
Yeah, okay.
Like, if we had just gotten a series of flashbacks without Agatha, like, egging her on.
Yeah,
like,
it was a little just contrived.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was my main problem with this episode. It was a contrived setup. And it kind of blanched off the end of the last episode where we weren't quite in love with that Agatha song.
Uh-huh.
Although the events of this episode almost contradicted the Agatha song, because she's like, I did everything.
Right. They kind of like parse out in this episode what Agatha did and what Wanda did because of her trauma.
Yeah. But despite all that, it being formulaic, again, that's my only knock against it. I obviously love the show still.
Yeah.
Paul Bettany's amazing still. All the actors are great. Looks great. Catherine Hahn is great.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Olsen especially is really just like shining as a superstar, in my opinion, in the show.
Yeah.
I think, okay, so let's speculate for the final episode. What do you think is going to happen, Sonya?
I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like they really pushed us forward much in that past episode. So it's like they're really saving it up, and whatever it's going to be is going to happen this next time. And it's got to be the bridge into Doctor Strange, whatever it is.
Which is weird that they had to announce that.
Yeah.
Why did they have to, like, a year or two ago say that the events of WandaVision will lead directly into Doctor Strange 2, Multiverse of Madness?
Because they wanted us all to be hyped about it being a comprehensive universe between the shows and the movies.
Yeah, I guess. But it just still feels like...
It worked. We're hyped.
Do you think it would have been more satisfying if it ends on... I think it's going to end on a cliffhanger, obviously.
Yeah, definitely.
And then it's going to say, see you in 2022 for Doctor Strange 2.
Right.
Do you think that would have been more impactful if you didn't already know that was going to happen? See, that's my problem with it. That you...
Maybe, but I think maybe they were... This was like the first show of this kind that they were putting out in Disney Plus. Maybe they were really worried that not a lot of people were going to tune in.
Well,
so they felt like they had to
They didn't have to worry. This show's a smash hit.
Yeah, but...
Everyone's talking about it.
A year before it was made, maybe they just wanted to hype the marketing as much as they could.
I think I guess you're right. We get the reveal at the end of this White Vision character, which is kind of an obscure pull from the comics.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, basically he's going to be an android soulless Vision that's probably going to have to fight the real Vision. I guarantee we see that in the final episode.
Mm-hmm.
I saw people online saying, like, oh, Wanda's going to have to kill Vision again. Like, her trauma just will never end.
Yeah.
She'll have to kill one version of him anyway or watch another version die. I think that's likely to happen.
Right.
But who knows? Maybe this Vision merges with the new white android and he gets his soul back and gets to live on.
Hmm.
Difficult to say there. But I think it ends in a cliffhanger and that'll be the most disappointing aspect of it. Do you think we're going to get a Quicksilver montage scene from like Days of Future Past or X-Men Apocalypse where he runs around to a music video and saves people?
I don't know, maybe. They still didn't fully explain what's going on with him,
right.
Why he's there, but...
Yeah.
I mean, Agatha talked about it a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. The other thing that I think is going to be a little redundant in the final episode is when... I think there's no way they're not going to have Vision versus Vision fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I think, to me, that just is like they've done that in several superhero movies already with characters fighting themselves.
Yeah.
Captain America and Avengers Endgame, but also Logan.
Mm-hmm.
It's so similar to Logan to me because Hugh Jackman fights the soulless clone of himself.
Right.
A version of himself that was grown in a laboratory that has no personality and no you know, mm-hmm. nothing. And it's just, I think like that's, it's going to be a similar vibe to Logan. So in a way, it's like creatively, that idea has already been expressed in modern superhero filmed content. Hmm. But I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, who the hell knows what's going to happen?
Do you think there's any chance that there's a little bit of a moral at the end of this one, at the end of the next episode, where Wanda has to actually get closure on her issues, so she has to really let him go because, you know, he's dead.
Yeah.
And that, but then we don't have Vision in any of the Marvel stuff going forward. But so it's, I don't like know if they'd be willing to make that sacrifice.
Well, but then it's like, well, we've talked about this before too. It's how long can they keep doing contracts with these actors? So they have to, it's more likely that the MCU, each phase is going to be a jumping off point for each actor. So they've said, or it's been sort of speculated on the internet, that phase four is going to heavily be about the story of Wanda in the movies and stuff going forward. So to me, that just thinks, that speaks to the idea of like, it's a jumping off point for Elizabeth Olsen to get like a grand finale. It's like each character's kind of going to be able to like bow out when they want.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, so maybe this is Paul Bettany's time to bow out, or maybe he's happy doing Marvel films and they're like, yeah, we want Vision to continue in the Avengers story. Again, we have to see. Yeah, it's sad that there's only one left, but then you do get the Falcon Winter Soldier show, which is probably not going to be quite as, like,
I'm just not as interested in those characters.
It's not going to be as mythologically satisfying as WandaVision. But I think it's going to be more action-packed. I think it's going to be more of a spectacle, which could be a lot of fun.
Right. It'll just be a different genre of show.
They're going to do a lot of, I bet it's going to be a lot of Captain America mythology, which I like. I think that's going to be its ace up the hole of this is Captain America kind of backstory stuff that's, it's going to be a little bit more, inject a little bit more mythological thrilling stuff into a standard action adventure where they're fighting on trains with machine guns and things.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that as well. Obviously, what else is there to talk about? yeah, so let's move on to season three of X-Men Evolution now, which, again, like we said at the top, maybe the best episode yet of the show.
Agreed.
Yeah, okay, cool. So,
we get a little bit of a new intro on this one. The song is the same, right? They just like montage together.
New clips. Beast is part of the main cast, I noticed.
Right. So we pick up right where we left off at the end of season two. We're outside the ruined X-Mansion. Mystique and Scott are having a disagreement, for lack of a better term.
Well, he's ready to kill her because Professor X is missing and she blew up the mansion.
And a whole bunch of other mutants are standing around. And right then, a bunch of police cars and helicopters surround the X-Mansion. And the mutants realize they gotta go.
Yeah, this is a cool scene. I mean, essentially the army is rolling out to the destroyed mansion. And they have to fight off a ton of police officers and helicoptered army guys.
I liked this action sequence. I thought it was cool.
Yes, very well choreographed action sequence. You know, at a certain point, Jean gets arrested, but the X-Men quickly handle that.
Like, right. Nightcrawler teleports into the empty driver's seat and the keys are in the ignition. He's like, thanks, guys.
Steals the cop car. Kitty comes phasing into the car. Iceman jumps in.
Right.
A lot of good Iceman action in this episode, too. Yeah, he definitely sort of joins the main team a little bit. And then it just keeps building and building with the amount of police they have to fight off. It reminded me of Grand Theft Auto, where if you get like 10 stars and you're, like, you've done so many illegal things that the army comes to kill you. So it felt like that. But there are some cool visual moments, too, where Jean lifts the police car that she's sitting in to fly off into the sunset to get away.
Boom Boom's, like, happily throwing bombs into the forest.
Oh, that was actually a very cool scene.
So she can, like, escape without the police catching her.
Yeah, there's a lot happening. almost too much to track. And the mutants sort of branch off into different groups, too.
Right.
The majority of the new mutants, minus Iceman, they head towards the sewers because I guess Berserker, who's a character I don't think we've talked about too much.
Right.
I think I forgot his name in the last episode. He's the one that shoots electricity out of his hands. He seems to know that there's underground mutants hiding in the sewers.
Right. He just says, oh, I know a place, follow me. So everyone kind of disperses because they're running away from the army and the police. But Scott says to whoever can hear them, meet at the lookout point.
Makeout point or whatever it's called.
at whatever time, 5 o'clock or something. So they all kind of disperse, and then we get, like, this cool montage.
Great montage.
Of
sorely needed for this show.
What's happening on the news. Like, all the news stations are covering this, like mutant story, basically the mutant menace, they call it.
Yeah.
And they have footage from the appearance of Magneto and the Sentinel, and they're all kind of speculating, like, what's going on with these mutants? Who are they? Are they dangerous?
And the news positively identifies several of the characters, Kitty Pryde and Jean Grey. They're like, oh, they go to this high school.
They're interviewing their friends from school.
And the school saying, like, yeah, there's actually been a lot of weird shit that's been going on here the past couple of years.
Now that you mention it, we have noticed something.
Yeah. So it finally closes a lot of plot holes, and it also makes the show way more interesting. It introduces the X-Men's political bent into the show. And it orients the characters clearly to their place in the world and what their mission is and the divergent philosophies of Magneto and Professor X. Mm-hmm. So, bravo show.
You made it.
You made it, and you've also made a really good episode, too, because if this is how season 3 is going to play out, I'm very excited.
Yeah.
There's a lot to like about this episode, right, which I'm going to get into.
So, cut to, I guess, 5 o'clock. The X-Men meet Mystique and some of the Brotherhood mutants at the lookout point. And they're, like, kind of discussing what to do. Mystique says, like, you know, they got one of my people, and I really need to recover him, but I don't even know where to start looking. Cue Nick Fury shows up out of the bushes.
Right, Nick Fury comes. But let's say the captured mutants are Blob, Rogue, Wolverine, Beast. I think that's
Spike.
It. Spike, yeah. Those are the captured mutants. And right. Nick Fury shows up to... He says, I sympathize with you, X-Men.
Wait, Blob is the only one from the Brotherhood that got captured, right?
I believe so, yes.
I'm kind of surprised. Mystique hasn't really shown a lot of allegiance to these kids.
Yeah, that's right. She kind of despises them.
I'm kind of surprised that she's willing to go to all this effort and get so worked up about Blob.
I think it's more than just Blob. I think she's got her main primary thing, which she says is Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
So she's all, like, crazed by Magneto still. We still don't quite know what her... whole revenge, the full reasons of her revenge plan against Magneto are, or why. I guess essentially Magneto discarded her at some point in the show, or I mean, she got thrown into the mutant evolving machine,
right,
too, which seems to give her the power to block telepathy.
How convenient.
Not quite explained yet, but I think that's what they imply. Nick Fury shows up and they say, well, why are you helping us? He's like, well, I've got my reasons.
Right. He's like, I can't really get involved, but here's the schematics to the military facility where your friends are being held.
And it's Area 51.
Gotta go.
So it being Area 51 is awesome. Like, that's that to me is like Marvel Comics, X-Men type. Like, yeah, use a real world location that's fun and bring it into... like a world of mythology and whatever. We could have a party there. So they're gonna go to rescue everyone. Mystique tries to assert control over the group because Storm's giving out the orders, and Mystique is quite the bully.
Yeah,
and
she's like, "Who put you in charge?" So they get into a little bit of an argument, and Storm is about to like
electrocute her
powers. Yeah, and
Jean stops her.
Yeah, Jean's like, "Just remember what about the professor."
Yeah.
Which I guess is to say, like, you don't want to get Mystique too angry at us because she knows where the professor is and she can
supposedly
help us.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Mystique is in charge and she starts giving out orders. Jean steals the X-Men helicopter from, like, the secure area where it's being held.
Right, the army captured it, I guess.
She uses her telekinesis to, like, silently lift it out of its gated area.
She's quite overpowered Jean, we've talked about on the show.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Wanda and Toad go off. Mystique instructs them to figure out what happened to Magneto because it appears that he died when the Sentinel crashed him at the end of the last episode.
But she suspects that he's not really dead because she knows he's
invincible,
tricky.
Right? So Toad and Wanda have like a whole little side quest in this episode. That's the B plot. It's not bad. Wanda's motivations are still a bit wonky.
Well, Wanda wants to track down her dad and, like, kill him or something.
Yeah, but I thought...
Because he put her into that mental institution her whole life.
I thought, like, weirdly, though, in that final fight, though, didn't she feel some kind of regret about potentially killing him? I don't know. There's something...
I don't know.
There's, like, a little... I got some mixed signals about Wanda's motivation. So, anyway, they break into a news van on the street that's been monitoring this insane story, and they look at the news footage and see that... Like, they slow it down and they see that Quicksilver saved Magneto at the last second.
Mm-hmm.
So this infuriates Wanda. Toad is incessantly hitting on Wanda throughout the whole episode, and he's a shitty... has got no charisma. He's really annoying
and
gross. He says, makes a guy want to brush his teeth.
Right.
It's just a joke that I did not appreciate.
It is very, like, teenage boy of him, though. Like, he just tries to, like, hug her and stuff. Like, just yeah, to, like...
but he's got this weird jazz man attitude. Yeah. And the way he talks, and he's just something off about...
Well, that's what the character is supposed to be, though, right?
I mean, in this
version,
supposed
to be, like, a little off-putting.
Yeah, he is, right. In all versions of Toad, he's off-putting, annoying, and gross. Yeah. This is their version of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, meanwhile, Storm is flying the helicopter with all the mutants inside out to Nevada. And,
I don't know which is the right one. I just know the joke from Veep where they have to keep going to Nevada or Nevada, and they keep correcting themselves and nobody knows.
I have a friend from there and he says Nevada, okay. So, but that's not what my accent wants to do, so I think every time I say it twice. Right. Anyway, so they get out to that, to Area 51. Mystique and the X-Men break into the facility. They're doing, like, a real stealth operation at first, and then we get this cool scene with Kitty and Iceman. They have to go into, like, some room that's, like, all covered in lasers and disable the alarm system, essentially.
Yeah.
And Iceman does, like, a cool little ice bridge over the lasers so that they can get to the box.
Again, it's just... biggest criticism of the original X-Men series is not having Iceman as a main character. I just think it's a cartoon character. Uh-huh. Forget about in real life. I mean, I love Iceman, and I'd like to see him in the MCU. But as a cartoon character, I think Iceman is top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
Made of ice, uses ice powers. He could do all sorts of fantastical things.
Yeah.
So
just here. That he can, like, ice skate through the air any place he wants to go.
Yeah.
Basically can fly.
Right. That's cool. Flying in a very unusual way. We've talked about it before, but similar to the magic of web slinging.
Yeah.
Just an unusual way to travel through the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun about Iceman.
Yeah. So we see it here, and he really uses it to his advantage. It's pretty cool. But they end up tripping the alarm by accident anyways.
Yeah.
So then they all have to really, like, book it. To do this rescue of Blob, Wolverine, Beast, Rogue, Spike.
Yep. It's a pretty cool scene. There's a lot of army guys they have to, deal with without killing them.
I thought this was another good action sequence.
Yeah, it really was. It was well-paced. There was, like, logic to the events of what was happening. I was thinking, there's even some decent Wolverine moments where he breaks free and he's using his claws, like, to try to stop a door from closing. I was just thinking back about what I loved about the original series more, too, and watching that scene of just so many, like, Larry Houston just animating amazing fast-paced Wolverine action where he's just slicing open chains in a very, like, brusque, realistic, fast-paced way. And it's, like, such hard-hitting, like, intense animation action. This show can't quite rise to that heights, but this is the best action we've seen in the show to this point.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we mentioned that the mutants went underground. The other mutants, Berserker, Boom Boom, Jubilee, maybe Magma.
Yeah, there were a few more.
Right. We're presuming they met Caliban.
Right.
Looks like Caliban, kind of sounds like how you think Caliban should sound like.
Although yeah.
Caliban's got... in every version we've seen of him filmed, this is a different voice.
Yeah.
And then I just read an interview with Chris Claremont where he says that he always pictured Caliban with a New York accent.
Oh.
So it's like... because in Logan, Caliban has a British accent because it's Stephen Merchant. In the X-Men Apocalypse movie, he's got, like, a German accent or something. So who the hell knows? This is more the German Caliban, I guess.
Right. But Berserker basically asks, like, hey, can we just, like, hide out with you guys for a few days?
He's like, sure.
With mutants too, and,
Yeah. All right, back to Area 51. They have a pretty thrilling escape.
They all have to climb up a ladder to a hatch up to the roof where Storm is going to bring the helicopter around to get them.
Mm-hmm.
And Mystique is the last one to go up. And Scott closes the door on her at the last second and is like, I'll let you come out and, like, get away with us if you tell us where Professor X is. And she's like, no, not going to happen. Like, you have to just let me out so I can come with you. And he's like, nope, not going to happen.
Yeah, and I like that. It was a bold choice. Cool. So she gets captured. I did think that she could easily have escaped through that hatch anyway. She could have turned into something that...
yeah.
Allowed her to punch through that hole. But whatever, it's fine. It was a good storytelling.
Or, like, we've seen her turn into a bird before. She
right.
just turned into, like, a small bird.
A small bird and fly through the hole or something. But it's okay. She gets captured. Pretty interesting. They don't know about Professor X. They're left in the dark about him.
Right.
They have a daring flying escape from Area 51. Storm electrocutes some missile silos. Cyclops and Iceman are hanging out the door of the helicopter shooting missiles.
Yeah, it's cool.
They do get away. I thought for sure we'd get some hokey scene where they run past a door. We see, like, a secret alien room.
Oh.
like some Area 51.
Right,
But no, it's kind of just a standard It's like almost a realistic presentation of Area 51, where they've got the stealth bombers on base. I mean, because if you believe, which I probably do, the full government history of Area 51, it's that it's just a place where they tested experimental aircraft like that stealth bomber and other sorts of weird. And that's why people who live around the area were like, oh, wow, they saw like weird lights in the sky in the 60s and 70s because they were testing like awesome new experimental like, airplanes right. that were not at the time what you think of what an airplane would look like. Do you believe that the government ever held aliens at Area 51? So, you know, I'll put it to you. You don't?
No, I don't.
So you wouldn't have gone to the raid Area 51 thing that a couple of years ago that everyone planned. We just get a million people to march on Area 51. How could they stop us? And then
I don't know. I do believe aliens are real. I don't believe that... like they have ever made contact here and I think if they're like an advanced enough civilization to actually like make it all those however many millions of light years over here and like figure out that like Earth is inhabited and whatever, I don't think they would be dumb enough to get like caught
just sort of just doing some like low skimming in the Earth atmosphere, potentially getting shot down or crash. And
I don't right. buy it.
It seems kind of implausible. That see, that's the thing, that you have people who believe in UFOs, which I don't disrespect. I just find it, I'm also like an extreme skeptic, because why, what's their mission? If based on all the evidence that people present as like, these are alien encounters, there's crash landings, it just seems, you're right, it just seems like an enormous waste of resources for such a...
On whose part, the aliens?
Yeah,
or us?
On the aliens part.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like why...
I think
are
like,
they sending these tiny scout ships to like levitate cows up and like hillbillies and experiment on them, fly away, you know, get captured by the government? Like, it just all seems kind of like not what you would do if you were an alien species.
No, and if you were an alien species, you'd be like Jean-Luc Picard on your Enterprise ship. And you'd be having like diplomatic relations with whoever was ready, and right. everyone else you'd stay out of their hair.
See, but you just said the magic keywords with whoever's ready. So if aliens were observing us, I think they would say there's no, humans are not ready.
No, definitely not. Right. We don't have any kind of like interspace travel. Or, it's like a big deal for us to have, like, send a rover to Mars.
Right, and we don't have a harmonious, peaceful species
absolutely
either
not.
That would seem like
we
not
can't get
hostile.
Along with each other. Why would aliens think that we'd be like a friendly neighbor to them?
Right. Well, yeah, let's give you all this insanely dangerous technology so you could what like travel the star systems and start bombing us for if you're racist or something.
Right. Try to exploit our resources.
Right. Exactly. So right, human beings aren't ready. I mean, it's a bummer because I mean, I love that book and movie Contact by Carl Sagan.
I know.
And the aliens are like, yeah, you're almost ready. Here's your
a
first
little
step
push in the right direction.
Yeah, and it's just sad that.
Yeah, but doesn't it prove that we're not ready? Because like Jodie Foster gets back and nobody believes her.
Well, they do. Like a lot of people do in the end. Yeah. She's got a cult following. I would say it just seems that like what we know about the size of the universe, the galaxy could be teeming with life, intelligent life.
Yeah.
But maybe the Earth is just in the part of the Milky Way that is just, like, literally there's no life for a zillion miles in every direction. Mm-hmm. We're just in, like, the opposite corner. It's like, and all the other aliens and the other parts, like, oh, that's the dead zone. Mm. Why bother exploring there? It's so far away. Uh-huh. It's pointless. There's nothing out there. Like, or our galaxy alone, we could be the one planet with life in the entire galaxy. And it's just an anomaly because you've literally got a near infinite amount of galaxies, right?
Right.
So maybe one of them would just only have one world and right. all the other ones have like got Star Wars and Star Trek going on in them. And we're just in this like back end galaxy that nobody cares about.
Could be.
Because when you just talk about the scale of universal size and space,
And you like run the probabilities.
Right.
It's like yeah, probably there's a galaxy with only one habitable planet.
Right. There's probably hundreds of billions of galaxies with no life, hundreds of billions with tons of life, maybe, and then hundreds of billions with just like
sparse
one planet.
Life.
Right. Sparse life. So we don't know what kind of galaxy we live in. Maybe there is like insane Star Wars civilizations happening.
But we
in
just
the
don't
Milky
know.
Way.
That's why we're not ready.
Well, I mean, it doesn't. We're not. What do you mean by that? We're almost ready. We were speculating as a species about it. We want it to be real.
Uh-huh.
We've dedicated entire mythological television shows.
I'm saying there's
shows.
So much that we don't know that we just don't have a grasp on.
Okay.
So, like, if...
So you're saying, like, if we found out it, we wouldn't be able to handle the truth? Is that is that the camp you fall into as, like, a government spook operative?
No, I'm just saying, like, if other aliens were by chance running surveillance here, they'd be like, these people are idiots. They don't know anything. They don't even know how much life is in their own galaxy. We're not going to make contact with them.
But why would you necessarily, why would they be so judgmental? So that's the thing. Like, I've heard Neil deGrasse Tyson talk about that. He says, the scales of intelligence are so, you know, the difference between your intelligence and a dog is so vast.
Right.
And it's like, imagine just like a few degree percentages more between an alien and a human, what they could know versus what we can know. Why would they even deign to talk to us?
Right.
I mean, my thing is, it's like, judgmental much. You know, like, who's to say, like, part of...
I don't think it's about judgment. I think it's like, if we got really good at space travel and we discovered a planet where the most intelligent life form was on the level of a dog.
Yeah.
Like, we know that the dog wouldn't be able to tell us anything, so...
Oh, I see what you're saying. So...
Why would we talk to
dogs? And
then
we might say, because we've got an ethical thing, it's like, well, we can observe this planet from outer space and just sort of do readings on it, and we don't want to disturb the planet. We don't want to mess with their ecology. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, we are ethically high-minded. And
I mean, that would be the ethical way to treat it.
That's what I'm saying.
Humans actually
do
that? Like, no, they'd...
I'm just imagining that a far more intelligent species probably has like a higher degree of ethics. And they're like, you're right. Like, these are monkey people. Wow, they've, you know, managed to build a few skyscrapers, and but they can light them up with electricity, and they've got some nuclear bombs, but whatever. So can my, like, infant son construct an atomic bomb. Right, yeah. My pet can make that with his mind. You're right. So, yeah. But...
I don't know. What do you think? You think there are aliens at Area 51?
No. I think... the ultimate stupidest thing you could say is that we're the aliens. So... aliens exist. They're out there. They're on planet Earth. So it's not out of the question. The theories I would most subscribe to, and with no proof, obviously, and still, like if you pin me down and say, no, it's not true, I would think that, like, I could imagine the human race being, like, a planted seed by other aliens. You know, they some other intelligent culture, it was some Star Trek episode. There is like some proto species that they sort of seeded the galaxy with other humanoid life forms.
Uh-huh.
And I could maybe like something like that.
Some aliens dropped off some like monkeys or something on Earth.
They're like, oh, they
go
found,
forth and thrive.
They found like a life seed, life-giving planet, and they put like an intelligent species on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really believe this.
You just like the theory?
Yeah, I like the theory. I don't know. I could see that, this potentially being a scenario. Yeah, it's sad that I'm skeptical about it. I wish I had more. We subscribe to the Discovery Plus channel,
mm-hmm.
where they've got these, like, UFO investigator shows.
Ugh, I hate those shows.
I know, you hate them. I want to give these shows a chance. I want to believe. I want to see what's going on. Because these are brand new shows made in 2020, 2021.
Uh-huh.
I want to see what the latest investigative UFO discussion is. And it was just so dumb. It was not convincing on any level. It was just the complete, like, this 1969 there was an alien crash outside of Indiana. We talked to some people who witnessed it, and they find some guy at a bar, and he's like, yeah, them aliens that came and the government carted them all out that night, and I'll never forget it. I'm like, all right, well, still zero evidence. And the investigator guy's like nodding along. He's like, wow, if we can connect the events from like Tulsa, Indiana with what we know about Project Blue Book, we could really see that aliens are probably out there. I'm like, no.
There was some episode you were watching where they were talking about how the alien spaceships that they found are like a tic-tac shape.
Yeah.
They kept calling it like a pill-shaped.
Uh-huh.
Well,
those are that was the most compelling thing, was the well, the Navy footage that came out last year.
No, because the footage is not saying anything. It's like when the pixels are too bright and it overloads the camera.
Yeah.
It just makes like a halo of light. You know what I'm talking about?
Okay. Like, I mean, not really, but all
right. It's like if you try to take a picture of the sun, right?
Yeah, okay, all right.
You don't actually get a picture of the sun. You get like a blob of light that looks vaguely like a tic-tac or a circle or
okay,
something like that.
Okay, all right.
Right?
Okay.
And the same thing when like something is moving quickly, like the camera doesn't capture it well. And it's at night, so, like, the light exposure is low. Like, I just felt like their quote-unquote evidence was not evidence, and that's the case for every single thing that they talk about on that show. They'll be like, look at this proof on this photograph, you know? And it'll be a photo from, like, 30 years ago, like, it's faded.
Right, it's pixelated.
It's pixelated. It's like, how could you possibly say that this is any kind of proof?
So, you don't think the Army videotapes that got released to the public of the fighter pilots tracing around those tic-tac blobs, you don't think that was in any way convince you of anything?
No, absolutely not.
Well, I mean, to me, it like, it,
they did convince you? You thought that was like...
The only thing that convinced me is that it's like, wow, it's from the Army.
Okay.
So, and they don't know what it is.
All
right. I did read some articles about it saying there's reasons to be skeptical of them, that there are certain sort of phenomenon that could happen in video recording equipment or like reflections off the ocean into the sky that you know, these weird like radar errors that could have accounted for these images of these like flying tic tacs that can go up and down, left and right, and disappear. So who knows?
Okay,
but yeah, I'm also skeptical, and it's sad. I just wish we lived in a more magical universe where, like we said,
you didn't have to be skeptical.
Witches, vampires, all that stuff is scary, but it'd be fun. It's more fun.
No, that wouldn't be fun. I'm glad there's no vampires.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. I mean, but when you have witches and vampires, you also have Spider-Man swinging around.
It's fine.
You don't need Spider-Man either.
I'll leave all of it instead of take all of it.
Okay. Well, yeah, so we live in the boring Earth. And that's that. So that's the end of...
Oh, wait. Did we finish talking about the episode?
Oh, yeah.
Mystique gets left behind. Oh, yeah. The Brotherhood mansion is surrounded by police. Toad goes in to, like, recover their belongings secretly. But then he comes out and all he brought was a bag of Wanda's clothes.
Yeah.
And he's, like, being creepy talking to her about it. And, like, Avalanche and the rest of them are like, oh, come on. Then...
The X-Men are back on makeout point, and they're looking at the ruins of the X-Mansion. And they establish some good stuff. They say, like, okay, the world knows about mutants. They all hate us.
Storm has the closing lines where she's talking about, you know, now we have to teach everyone out there that we're actually the good guys before it's too late.
Right.
So here's our, like, moral standpoint.
Yeah, so they finally have a moral drive forward.
Right.
That makes sense. It's in line with the X-Men comics and makes for a more compelling narrative. And that's, you know, that's been our opinion throughout this entire run of the show, and we're happy that they finally got to that point. So a very good episode. Unfortunate that aliens probably aren't real. Let us know what you think on the Facebook group. Sonya, do you have any final words before we depart?
No.
Okay, all right, good night, everybody.
Good night.